I was like, okay, this is the research community I would love to be in the rest of my life.
Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, the show where I talk to lots of different folks about innovative ways to better feed the world. I'm your host, Anna Leonis, and I don't mean to sound corny when I tell you I really appreciate you tuning your ears into this week's episode. My listeners come from all fields of work, and it amazes me how well the topic resonates. I guess everybody eats, so when food issues pop up, people are interested in the fix. Okay, that is enough puns for now. I promise I front-loaded them all in this episode. And I'm sure you've already guessed this week's topic, but if not,
it's cold!
Also known as maize if you're a scientist. According to the USDA, the US is the largest producer, consumer, and exporter of corn in the world. The majority of that crop is grown in the Midwest, and most of the corn is actually used in livestock feed, which harkens back to last week's episode about how to better feed cows and other farmed animals so that they don't create as much methane. If you haven't checked that one out yet, you definitely should. But corn is a big deal, and right now it's facing a big challenge. Tar spots. Luckily, science is on the case. I talked with Addie Thompson of the Thompson Maize Lab at Michigan State University about her current research in corn tar spots and her personal journey through the cornfields.
My name is Dr. Addie Thompson, and I'm an assistant professor at Michigan State University. My lab works primarily on maize genetics. We do a little bit of sorghum as well, but we're interested in what genes control different traits in the plants, and then how those respond to different environments and how we can predict how plants will grow and develop in different environments. A little bit more about me. I'm originally from Iowa, but I moved to Michigan to fill this role about 5 years ago, and I've been loving it. So happy to be here.
And you have your own lab, actually, correct? It's called the Thompson Lab.
Yes, very, very creative, original name. So when I came here, I started the lab, and my appointment is that I teach and do research. And so my classes are mostly graduate courses, but 80% of my appointment is in research. And so I take graduate students and undergraduate students, postdocs, technicians into my lab, and we all work together on different questions of interest.
Cool. And right now, one of your main questions of interest is corn tar spots. What's going on? How do we mediate this?
So tar spot is a disease caused by a fungal pathogen, Phylloceramatus. The tar spots that you see on the leaf are the fungal fruiting bodies. And so that's how the fungus reproduces. Those spots will, as the fungus infects the plant, release spores that can infect other plants as well. So it can spread by wind or water splashing. The fungus itself will eventually sort of break down the canopy. So the leaves in maize, it covers all the leaves, and it will also pull the nutrients out of the stalk. So it makes the plant just much weaker. And then the plants are more likely to fall over. We call that lodging, but the plants lodge more easily, which makes it harder to harvest. Research has shown that it can lead to up to 40% yield loss. And I think that just depends on when it comes in and how severe it gets within a season. It's very much environmentally influenced. So if you have a cool, wet, very moist season, increased humidity, that will drive the disease to spread a lot faster and be much more severe.
So this is a big deal. Corn tar spots can cause a lot of damage to corn crops, which, as we all now know, are one of the major crops not only in the US, but worldwide. So what do? We look to scientists like Addie for solutions. And that's exactly what the United States Department of Agriculture did when they gave her a lab grant to study this pesky fungus.
This is actually the second grant the USDA has given us, and I think they've also funded other groups as well. The reason this is suddenly such a big deal is because this disease, although it's been around in Central and South America for the last 100 years or so, just came into the upper US in 2015 or 2014, I think, was the first time it was cited. So it's a brand new disease to the upper Midwest, which means nothing was really resistant. So all the farmers' varieties were susceptible to this for the most part. And so, yes, it's been a big area of interest for us to learn about tar spot and find some resistance and those sorts of things. I work on those USDA grants with the plant pathologist here at Michigan State. His name is Marty Chilvers, and he is the expert on the actual diseases themselves. And we're more interested in, from the plant side, can we identify resistant varieties, and what is the cause of that resistance? can we start working that into some, we call it germplasm, so some varieties that can be used by other breeders or groups, both industries and public-private institutions, to get those into farmers' fields. So that's been our role.
So the Thompson Lab is being supported by the United States Department of Agriculture through a plant breeding grant to create germplasms or varieties of the crop that are more resistant to tar spots.
So where is this mainly impacting crops? What region of the U.S.?
It's mostly in the upper Midwest, right around the Great Lakes area, but it has been now found all the way out almost into Nebraska. But then also there are some regions of Pennsylvania, I think as far east as it goes, and then it jumps then down. There's a few places in Florida. So Florida can grow corn year round. And so they see it more in kind of the winter season that they have down there. For us, obviously, it's more in the summer.
And it's interesting that it's spreading so quickly. You said earlier it spreads by wind and water.
Yes, and it can overwinter as well. And so we do see cases where the first incidents in a given season might be kind of coming up from the ground where it had overwintered and now there's spots forming, you know, toward the bottom of the plants. But there's also a lot of cases where you see spots that come in sort of from the top. So they're blowing in from a neighboring field and then dropping onto the plants in the field. And then from there, it can spread anywhere else in the field. Mostly by wind, I would say, is the main way that it spreads. But there are also minor contributors, like, you know, if you have some sort of wildlife, insect or animals that moves around, or if you have rain that falls on it and then it splashes the spores to the next plant over. So that's a way that it can move as well. Yeah.
Does it impact other crops or mainly corn?
Not that anyone has seen so far. I think this particular Phylacora maatus is maize. There are other Phylacora species that maybe affect other plants, but they would not be the same pathogen specifically.
Okay. And I keep saying corn, but you keep saying maize. So I want to just make sure I'm correct here. What is that just a more technical term or?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I've been trained as a scientist to say maize mostly for the benefit of the international community, because if you say corn over in Europe, that could mean any type of kernel. Like you'd say a wheat corn. So maize is sort of the universal scientific term, but yes, we are talking about corn.
Good. That's a fun little fact, actually.
Yeah. A related question actually that I get a lot is popcorn and sweet corn and, you know, corn that we feed to cattle or use for bioenergy, is that all the same kind of corn or is that all the same species? Well, it is the same species, but they are all kind of bred as separate types so that you can cross them together, but it just won't taste very good. So we call the kind that we feed to cows or that we use for bioenergy or that it gets used in commercial processes, that's what the majority of the corn is in the U.S. And that we kind of call that field corn, basically. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, if you drive by a field, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But we work on mostly field corn, but we do also have some projects in sweet corn with collaboration with some sweet corn breeders. So we are working to put resistance into some sweet corn varieties as well. I don't yet have any projects on popcorn, but I'm not opposed to the idea.
That would be fun.
Yes.
So back to the research that you're currently doing, what have you found so far and why is that important?
So the first sort of funding cycle that we had, we were able to screen many, many diverse varieties from a temperate region and found resistance, started crossing those into more elite material. So we started basically making some populations.
Okay, quick pause on the scientific jargon. She's basically saying the lab has already found resistance within the crop and they're breeding that into different populations to create resistant varieties.
Those populations are important both for passing on resistance, but also for doing further genetic studies to try and figure out what it is that's causing the resistance. In the next round, we've been pretty excited about using our own material now. And we've been asking questions about how can we use sort of spectral or remote or drone-based technologies to predict onset and severity and kind of model that? But then also, are there other biochemical attributes of the plant that play a role in defense? And so one area that we're looking at specifically is phenolic compounds.
Phenolic compounds are something naturally existing in plants. They make it colorful and flavorful, and they have defense mechanisms for the plant. Previous research shows that these phenolic compounds can help with plant resistance to diseases, so that's just another thing that's being studied in the Thompson lab right now.
as far as what we found so far, we made really rapid, great progress the first several years we were working on this. I will say last year, we were focused mostly on progressing our populations and increasing our seed supplies and kind of getting ourselves ready to do more research, because the trials that we had planted for our data collection, we just did not see a lot of tar spot last year. And so we collected what data we could, but it was very low disease severity. And so we're really hoping selfishly for a really strong showing of tar spot this summer. Unfortunately for the farmers, I'm sorry. We at least in our fields, we're hoping that we get lots of disease.
Was that because you were so successful previously that you just reduced the amount of tar spots that you could even study?
That I would love to say yes. that could play a role, but I think across the board, farmers saw less tar spot last year just because of the weather. It was more warm and dry for the most part last summer, and the times that we would get the cool, moist times were not well timed with disease progression. So there were some fields that we planted extra late that we were able to see more disease late in the season. But the thing about tar spot is it's an obligate pathogen. So it has to have that living tissue. There's not really a way you can sort of propagate it otherwise. So we have to just rely on natural infection. We can't go and inoculate the field. And also once the tissue dies off at the end of the year, it's too late. So that's kind of our strategy now, is just to have really late planting so that when the tar spot gets worse, kind of in August, that we still have lots of green tissue that's there ready to be infected.
So when will we be able to see your research being used at farms?
I would say I'm pretty confident with some of the materials we've generated so far. I just need to have the field trials and some of the data to get that published and get it released. So we are working with industry now, but we're also making plans to submit some of that germplasm to what's called the NPGS, so the National Plant Germplasm System. The one for corn maize in the US is actually in Ames, Iowa. So we're excited to contribute some resistant materials to them as well. So these will be publicly available for anyone to use for their breeding programs.
And now I kind of want to shift to more about you. You said you moved here from Iowa?
Actually, so I was born in Iowa. Okay. I went to school at Iowa State, but I did my graduate work at University of Minnesota and then a postdoc at Purdue. So I moved here from Indiana.
Oh,
technically. Yeah.
Okay. So
just been touring the Midwest.
Yeah. All over the place. What brought you to maize? What brought you to maize?
That's a great question. I'm the product of a lot of youth programs. And so the first experience I had with anything close to this area was actually back in junior high. There was a summer camp on genetics, and actually it was based on human genetics. And so the human, you know, yeah,
in junior high?
Junior high, the human genome sequence had just come out. And so it was like a camp on genetics. And I guess that's dating me a little bit. But I just thought it was so cool. I'm like, how do these little base pairs like determine all these things? This is awesome. And so I got super excited about genetics. And then between, in high school then, there was a program, still is a program, called the World Food Prize, which was started by Norman Borlaug some years ago as kind of like the Nobel Peace Prize for agriculture. But as part of that, he had a real passion about educating youth and getting them involved in agriculture. And so I participated in the World Food Prize Youth Institute. And as part of that, we got to attend the event and the symposium and learn all these things about world agriculture, which I had not had exposure to. I'll put in a plug here. That's still a program that is maintained, and it's actually expanded significantly.
That's the World Food Prize Global Youth Institute. Check it out on the World Wide Web or click the link in the description of the pod. After the Youth Institute event, Addie got the opportunity to intern for 8 weeks in the Philippines at a global research center.
In high school, I went to the Philippines, and I say this with incredulity on my face for those who are just listening. I think back and I'm like, how did I have the courage to do that? But yes, I spent 8 weeks in the Philippines at the Rice Research Institute, and that's, I think, where I mainly fell in love with research.
So in undergrad, Addie began working with maize, but the corn bug didn't really bite until she was working on her PhD in Minnesota, and she was recruited to work with a professor on a grant studying corn. Though she resisted it for a lot of her academic career, eventually the kernel of curiosity planted all those years ago at junior high gene camp popped.
I came into it a little bit reluctantly, I will admit, just because I was looking for something a little different, but it ended up being the best decision I could have made. For multiple reasons. One is that maize is a really exciting, interesting genetic system to work in, just from the scientific perspective. Two different varieties of maize are more different from each other than humans are from chimpanzees, or I think even more distantly than that, probably elephants. There's a lot of cool things you can do genetically, but the biggest reason, we're getting to the final actual answer here.
The kernel.
Is it the maize? Yeah, the kernel, that's very good. The maize genetics community is really, really friendly and awesome. And I fell in love with the people. They're all incredibly smart, but they're all incredibly kind. And so after the first time that I attended a maize genetics conference, I was like, okay, this is the research community I would love to be in the rest of my life.
Basically, scientists of the corn are a lot friendlier than the children.
And I also like that it is impactful because I get to actually talk with a lot of farmers and meet with people that this research actually benefits. And that's one of the reasons USDA is super interested, but it's also part of why it makes it fun for us as researchers to see that our work is actually meaningful. Yeah.
What is the most important thing that you want people to know about the research you're doing, about who you are, about corn in general, maize in general?
You know, if you ask me this question again in a month or two, it's probably going to be a different answer. But I think what comes to mind right now is I want to emphasize that public maize research is important. That's one of the questions I get sometimes because this is such a high value, you know, widely grown crop, there's a ton of industry support here, industry breeding that goes on. So everything that a farmer sees is coming from a company, right? There's no Michigan State varieties that are released directly. They're buying stuff from Syngenta or Corteva or Bayer. And so they don't see the interactions that go on. And so I would love to highlight the fact that public research is still super important, even if you're not seeing our name on your products. Our research has gone into those products, I can about promise you. It's still a hugely important sector, and that's the reason this all works and that farmers have great varieties to grow in their fields. It's partly thanks to public research that goes on.
That's all for this week, folks. We made it through with minimal puns but maximal corn facts, and that's how I like it. Thank you to Addie Thompson and the whole Thompson Maize Lab for the work you do to find farming fixes. Thank you to the Freezer Bees. I realize I've been thanking the Knight Center a lot, but I haven't been properly shouting out my peers who are also funded by the Knight Center over at Great Lakes Echo, so shout out to them. I'm linking the website below because they're producing wonderful environmental journalism, and if you're interested in this podcast, you'll likely be interested in a lot of things they publish. And last but never least, thank you, listeners. It's nice to know that there's someone else out there on the other end of this listening, someone who cares about how to better feed the world. Maybe this was a really corny episode. Until next time, I've been your host, Anna Leonis.